licorice fishes.
Mm, they're very nice. They're part of the Haribo Top Star mix.
Lick a fish.
Mm.
Did you lick a fish?
I really like Haribo.
You really like Haribo?
Isn't Haribo great?
Haribo and licorice don't really seem to go together in my eyes.
They do when you live in Denmark.
Tom and Matt Attack.
I've just eaten four Haribo licorice fish.
From some Top Star mix.
Yeah.
It's not just Star Mix, ladies like and gentlemen of the UK, but Top Star Mix.
Regional equivalent of Star Mix. You can get Star Mix here in Denmark, but this is like the one for Denmark, I guess. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's got cola bottles and it's got, from the looks of things, it's got gummy bears in it.
They were strawberry milkshake.
Oh, really? Oh, God. So they're properly mixing it up then. Yeah. They got weird tangerine slices and then licorice fish.
These are popular wherever licorice is popular, and it seems to be popular here. And I assume in other Scandinavian countries.
Well, Scandinavians like their fish. They also like licorice. Mm, why not? Why not merge the two in perfect harmony?
The little bear here is got a microphone. He's with the boy. He's got a guitar. You know.
It's because they're stars, Tom. Because it's Top Star
Top
Mix.
Top Star Mix.
Do you think it was going to be Pop Star Mix, but Simon Cowell and that other bloke used to be on Pop Stars intervened?
Oh, him?
Yeah.
The one who created it?
The guy with the white hair and the glasses, I can't remember his name.
Oh, you mean, what's his name?
Simon Waterman.
Waterman, Pete Waterman.
Yes, that's
right. Pete Waterman actually lives, I think he lives in Crewe.
Really?
Which is where
I think Pete Waterman listens to our podcast.
Probably not.
I would
he's really
not.
Into trains, you see, I think. And
so he went Crewe to is like where the, your trains are.
Yeah, Crewe is pretty famous for its trains.
It is a...
It's got a railway museum.
It also has a big railway station where lots of lines intersect.
That is correct.
When I was on a train from London going to my brother's in Arlesey, there was a train going to Crewe that I was on.
Did you go into Crewe?
No, I went to Arlesey, which is just outside of North London. But
oh.
Yeah, it was going that way.
You've never been into Crewe then?
I've not been into Crewe. I'm not crewed up.
You think one day... You have to visit.
One day, I will visit Crewe, yes. Anyways, how have you been, Thomas? You all right?
Not so bad. You?
Okay. I've been playing a lot of Game Boy games, as you would imagine. But other than that,
yeah, you've dedicated
away.
A good portion of your day.
I have.
The Game Boy game.
I'm going to talk about this one now because I played it today twice, as it happens, but it's not going to be on an episode of Biographic for a couple of weeks anyway, because I was recording the backlog today for Christmas. And
Matt doesn't take holidays.
He's
that dedicated to his cause.
He never sleeps. He's always listening to Game Boys. No, I recorded several videos today. I won't name the other ones bar this one. And I was just going to do the one for the week before Christmas, which was Asterix, which is a game published by Infogrames, based on the popular French cartoon Viking. He's a Gaul,
he's
but
a Gaul.
Does he count?
He's not a
does
Viking.
He? Well, he's got a. He's
Viking
got like.
Is from Scandinavia.
Yeah, I know, but he's kind of got like a Viking helmet.
He's
I always thought he was a Viking when I was a kid. Anyways, and essentially, this game sees you rescuing Obelix, who's been captured by the Romans, and you go through several levels. Which,
how did they capture Obelix?
I don't know.
He fell into the magic potion as a boy.
He did,
he's
yes.
He's super strong all the time.
Exactly. Except when he gets captured by a really terrible end boss, apparently. But anyways, I digress. So I played this game for about 2 hours, not really enjoying it. It's got kind of slippy platforming mechanics. You pointed out that it's kind of like Sonic in the fact that you don't stop automatically. You've still got that second of give
when
as
you
the
mentioned
walk cycle finishes.
It had this slippy walking mechanics. The first thing I thought of was Sonic, and I played it and realised, no.
Yeah.
Not quite like Sonic.
But I think it was trying to emulate Sonic because the way the levels are set out are in zones. Even though it feels very aesthetically like Super Mario, and it's even got like a bit of like a weird parallax scroll thing going on, which you don't really see that often on the Game Boy, which
fast.
Is nice.
It's not like Sonic.
It's not fast.
Then Sonic walks nowadays.
So. Yes, Sonic. Sonic don't run, Tom. That's the thing now. He don't run. Yeah. But I was playing this game, and for the 2 hours I was playing, and I was like, oh my god, what a stupid mechanic to have in place. Why would you... So essentially what happens is when you run by holding forward, it doesn't really go into a run animation, just the walk animation speeds up a little bit. And you jump, your momentum carries on when you stop, which means that a lot of the time you will jump onto a platform and then that means you will walk off because Asterix will complete his walk animation and then walk off the edge.
Mm, not so good.
Which is quite frustrating. It took me about 2 hours to play through it the first time. And lo and behold, I got to my Mac to turn it off to go, right, cool, I've done that now. And my Mac had frozen and meant I'd lost all the footage. And I was like, right, shit, okay, I've got to do this now while I still am in the zone of playing this game, while I still know the mechanics. And I sat back down and I did it in 30 minutes. Like, I died like 3 times. Mm. And it led me to question, because whereas I think if I would have reviewed that game after the first playthrough, I would have perhaps said it was a bad game. Now, I played it again, and because I was used to how the game was played, it was okay. Like, I didn't really perceive it as a bad game because I could play it. And it's kind of led me to really question what I perceive as a bad game. Like, what is the definition of a bad game? Because, I mean, mechanically, this game isn't like your typical platformer and what you would expect. And that is usually what I'd consider a bad game if it doesn't really...
Was that it? What about the level design? Was that any good?
The level design was all right. Like, the music was really nice. The sprites looked okay. Like, it wasn't a bad game in terms of everything else. It was just these niggly mechanics and the fact that they throw a lot of enemies at you. And you can do one or two nice things with this whole, like, momentum mechanic. Like, you can kind of go into, like, a slide. So if someone throws a spear at you and you hit it at the right second, so you'll kind of almost slide under the spear.
You're saying it's just a case of getting used to it.
It is just a case of getting used to it, but it did take an awful long time to get used to it.
The argument is, should you have to take that much time getting used to it?
Should you have to?
No.
And I kind of put myself in the phase of me being a kid. Like, there's probably some people out there who don't like Kirby's Dream Land. And I think I only really like Kirby's Dream Land and appreciate its mechanics because I've played it so much as a kid.
Ah, but I appreciate Kirby as well. And that's the first time I played it. It's like a solid game. Plays well, it controls well. It's a little different to your average platformer, but once you know what you're doing, then it makes sense. There's
exactly
a little bit of a learning curve in Kirby. It's not like most.
There is a little bit of a learning curve in Kirby. But what I'm trying to say is, like, if you were a child, if we weren't living in the world of all-consuming media that we are now and we didn't have this disposable income and access to so many games as we do, would our opinions of the games we play be different? Because we would
spend
have...
all that money and you'd only be able to get like one or two games a year.
Yeah, like if I was a kid, because like I've heard people refer to this game as their favourite Game Boy game. This is why I was so anxious to play it. So I've heard people say, like,
nostalgia.
This was their Mario. Like, this was their Mario as a kid. This is what they had on the Game Boy, and they really enjoyed it. Yeah. And playing it, I couldn't really see that to start with, and then I kind of got what they meant, like, the second time through.
Maybe it's just purely kids whose parents bought them Asterix rather than Mario, and that was the best they'd played.
Yeah, but, like, is that then, after them playing Mario, does that change their view
on
it? No,
then you have the nostalgia. They'll never go.
No, that's true. But
and
like,
it's not bad enough for you to totally say, well, forget it. It's no good.
But like, I'm nostalgic for games that aren't really that great. Like, Power Blade isn't an absolutely fantastic game. If anything, it's a bit of a Mega Man ripoff. Like, I'm nostalgic for that game, but I can say, like, okay, well, it isn't the best game. Like, I like Trojan by Capcom, and that game is absolute garbage. I like, I've even forgotten the name of it, Kabuki Ninja thing. I can't remember the name of it. It's been so long since I've played that game. That game is a game I knew was bad, but I really like the graphics in it, so I'm somewhat nostalgic to that.
I'm trying to think of a game I got as a kid that I got and was really disappointed in.
Oh, it's got to be some. You're a Master System.
No. I don't think there was anything on Master System that I had that I was really, really Disappointing buy.
Right, let's reel this out. You had a mass system, you had a CDI. It's got to be. Come on, Tom.
I have very low standards, I suppose, video games.
Because I had moments when I was a kid, and I showed you one of them earlier. You picked up a cart that I was trying to play this morning, and I still, to this day, despise. And that's Bart versus the Juggernauts. Like, a friend of mine had Hook, Bart versus the Juggernauts, and Gremlins 2. Arguably three of the worst Game Boy games in existence, in my eyes.
But three games you probably pick up anyway, because there's Gremlins, cool. Simpsons, cool. What was the other one?
Hook.
Hook, yeah, cool.
Yeah. But like...
So I can understand why someone would own those games.
No, I can understand why they'd own them as well. I mean, obviously they did own Mario and stuff as well, but obviously I had those games, so I wasn't borrowing the ones I had. But just like playing those now, like surely there's no one out there that's really nostalgic for Gremlins 2 in the same way that you would be for a Mario title, is what I'm trying to say. Mm. Like,
probably not, no.
There must be... Well,
unless they've never played a Mario title and Gremlins 2 is the best game they've ever played.
Yeah, but like, what I'm saying is like, mechanically, Asterix must be a good game. Like, if you play it and if you learn the game, it must be a good game. Like, because these people speak so highly of it, and I mean...
But even
saying,
I
like,
played it for what? Minute,
yeah,
and I didn't want to play it anymore after that.
Yeah,
I just thought the control was so specific and difficult.
And admittedly, you were on the hardest level there is. You were on the final level.
Oh, okay.
So there is a bit of a learning curve going up to that level, and it's got some redeeming features, like it's got a nice minecart level and stuff, which is
predate Donkey Kong.
Yes, it does. I was actually trying to think of that. I wanted to look it up before this podcast started.
Indiana Jones.
What is the first minecart level, like, of all gaming? Because, like, there's a set period in, like, the 90s where there's a minecart level and everything.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Indiana Jones.
Do you think?
Maybe popularized it. I'm sure there's got to have been Minecraft.
Minecraft, oh, no. Dear. It's not in there.
Minecart levels before that. There must have been. But the arcade game of Temple of Doom, I think, certainly had minecart in it. But no, prior to that, I don't really know. I'm not that familiar.
Just grabbing my phone to check this. There's got to be some documented occurrence of first minecart
level. Wait, you think they're that popular? I mean, I know Donkey Kong used them quite heavily. Even the latest one.
Kid Dracula has a minecart level.
Oh, so does Rocket Knight Adventures.
Yeah, like, they're in a lot of games. Minecart Carnage. It's actually a Games Radar article called The Rise and Fall of the Minecart Level.
Okay.
So, I see what this has to
say. Games Radar used to go on that, actually. When it was still, like, Future Publishing, I think, then. And they did N64 magazine and such.
Yeah, I think so. They're saying them what the carts are, and then they're saying what the best is. Yeah, they're saying the Donkey Kong in 1994 is one of the best minecart levels. I know that, but it doesn't specify as to which were the first ones.
Hmm. Well, if any of you listeners know,
yeah, if anyone does know, then please get in touch, because that would be interesting. From looks of things, this is a Mario has... No, it's just on a Super Mario Wiki that links in with Donkey Kong. That's a bit weird. No, I can't. I can only find Donkey Kong Country references and Kid Dracula and this game both predate those, so it'd be interesting to see what that is. Mm-hmm. But this is what I'm trying to say, though. Like, am I wrong to say what I've been saying about Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, for example? Like, I've been out and out calling
that... Well, you don't like it.
...a terrible game.
I think, you know, it's not a terrible game, because there's plenty of people who like it. Like you're saying about this Asterix game.
And that's what I'm...
Personally, you don't like it. Fair enough.
But, I mean, then you kind of need to separate the aesthetic choice of you liking a game away from the actual game itself. I mean, you know, I mean... You look at things now like these Polygon reviews that have come out of this whole Gamersgate debacle, and people giving Bayonetta a 5 because of sexism. And that's an aesthetic choice based on your beliefs to say...
Does it mean it's a bad game?
That you don't like it because of this, but does that necessarily because of its views mean that a game's a five? You know what I mean? Like...
Yeah.
How should you review games, I guess, is the question I'm kind of getting at. Like, is it based on your aesthetic choices? Is it based on the whole package? Is it based if you have fun or not?
Based, like, I think, when it comes down to it, it's fun. If you had fun with it, then that's good. Even if it looks like ass, you know?
But I mean, like, sometimes you get reviews and they'll give something a seven because they see what it's trying to achieve, you know?
Well, like, a lot of reviews do this out of, they have, like, the graphics, they have the sound, they have the playability, replay value, and they assess them in each area.
Yeah.
And if they don't kind of, if they fall short in any one area, then their final score will be reflective of that. It may be the most fun game ever, but if it's very short,
yeah,
then they'll mark it down.
A la Felix the Cat.
So it depends on how you, what strategy you take into doing the review, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. It's kind of based not only on... Oh, but I don't know if I like that, see? Like, no, I'm thinking about it, because, I mean, my gameplay review of the Game Boy game so far has pretty much just been down
to...
You
just give an opinion.
I've given an opinion. But I've also taken into account, like, I've not really openly trashed the game. I think the only game I've really been, why the fuck does this exist, is Cool World. That's because it doesn't, it's not really very fun. It doesn't mechanically, it tries to do something different, but that's not necessarily a good game.
To be,
you know,
entertaining. And if a game isn't entertaining, then
yeah, but
it's
what,
not a good game.
But is that to say then that games shouldn't try to innovate, you know? Like, what if a game is very innovative and you see, like, wow, it does something very well, and it's kind
like
of got this
whole... You could
apply
this to music. Maybe a piece of music is entertaining.
Yeah.
But it certainly has an effect on you. It's like a piece of art.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
like,
it may not be a nice feeling you get from it. But with games, you know, your entire experience is based on your interaction. I don't know.
See,
it's really,
I mean,
tricky, actually.
It's kind of a grey area, and I was just kind of sat there playing through Asterix for a second time, going like, shit, like, I've been reviewing games wrong. Like, have I been giving my opinion on these games based on the wrong merits? Like,
it's maybe difficult to compare a game and a film, for instance.
Yeah, I think so.
Because essentially they are very different. It depends on the game. You know, some games are more like films.
Because, I mean, like, you can't rate a game on its narrative, obviously. Like, you can say that a game, I don't know, take a Final Fantasy game, for example, like, someone might enjoy that story, but not enjoy the gameplay.
You've got to enjoy some of the gameplay.
But then
Shenmue's a good,
yeah,
thing,
because
that's a very unique style of gameplay, which is not going to appeal to everybody. Except, and it's not the kind of game I'd usually play.
Yeah.
And yet I still enjoyed that game, coming back to it, being within the world, the characters. It wasn't so much about the actual gameplay of Shenmue.
Yeah.
It was about the experience.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, I think it boils down to, like, if you look at something like Asterix now, which I was kind of ready to almost poo-poo all over it because it didn't meet my specifications for what a platformer should be. When it exists within its own set of parameters, when it's not a broken game, when it is playable once you know how the rules of that game, it's just like a board game, you know? Like, long as it adheres to its own rules, can it then be a bad game?
Wow. It's a great topic for discussion. I don't have the answers.
No, neither do I, but it's just something I kind of wanted to reflect upon.
Yeah, yeah, it's an interesting discussion point.
Having played a game that I don't really know how to rate.
Again, I'd love to hear our listeners' opinions on this, you know. Maybe get in touch with us on Twitter.
Yeah, at TMAcast or on facebook.com/TomandMattAttack. I know, obviously, there are a lot of content creators listening to this, people who make their own YouTube videos and make podcasts such as Retro Asylum and these kind of things. So please get in contact with us, guys. Reflect upon this, or what if you are someone listening to podcasts and looking at YouTube videos reviews.
Is the question,
how do you process that?
How do you define a bad game?
Yeah, how do you define a bad game, I guess? What is a bad game?
Yeah.
Is probably the question.
What doesn't it deliver to you? in order for it to be a bad game.
Is it based upon story? Is it based upon gameplay mechanics? Is it based upon innovation? Let us know.
Anyways,
what have you been up to this week?
I've been playing the delightful Toy Box Turbos a little bit more.
Really?
It's got a week in of owning the game.
Still playing it at every opportunity, I see.
Yeah, I haven't completed everything quite yet. It's got a really good difficulty curve.
Yeah.
And there are a few things I didn't mention about the game last week that I want to bring up this week. It's the environments, they're interactive. Like, things like paper clips, you know, you hit them and they move. Things like dominoes stacked, you break through them and get into the shortcut, for instance.
Do they then reset when you go back around the track?
No, they don't. They stay where they were.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, it's another nice, neat thing about this game. For those not in the know and haven't listened to maybe last week's podcast to play the game, it's a spiritual sequel to Micro Machines. It's been released now on the Xbox 360. Previous week, it was only available on the PS3. This game deserves an audience.
It does look like a very fun game. I still haven't played it. I think maybe we'll need to do a TMA quickie on this.
It made me think about... I never played V3, which was Micro Machines V3 on the PlayStation.
Yeah.
And that was a similar setup, you know. It's a more isometric 3D, totally 3D game. I'd be really interested now to play that and compare it to Toy Box Turbos, because essentially it's the same idea.
Yeah.
I don't know if it had weapons, because that's something that sets this new one apart from old Micro Machines games.
Would it be as appealing, do you think, going back?
I don't know. I'm just curious to try it now, after having played so much Toy Box Turbos, which I'm nearly done on the single player. Okay. I think by this next podcast, I should have, if I keep it up, I should have...
I think you will. Like, I can't see you lapsing.
It's a joy.
You've been really enjoying it.
It's a joy to play, yeah. And we've played a few multiplayer matches since, and with our good friend Austin the other day.
With a good friend Austin, yeah.
Austin liked it as well. If Austin liked it, you know. He's got a very high benchmark
for games. How did he feel about Micro Machines? Did he play it that night? We had a retro evening.
He was busy playing on the GameCube, wasn't
he? Oh, yeah, he's just playing Smash Brothers, I think, right?
Mario Kart, Smash Brothers, WarioWare.
Yeah.
Anything GameCube. He's a GameCube guy.
He was, yeah. Because, I mean, the opinion of Micro Machines that evening seemed to be pretty high, right? Like, a lot of people seem to enjoy playing Micro Machines.
Micro Machines.
It's because it's a very good game. Yeah. I mean, even after I sold my original Mega Drive 2, like, it was one of the games I kept hold of. I kept hold of that, Megalomania, and Golden Axe.
It's in my top 10.
Oh, I didn't keep Golden Axe. I kept Shinobi.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you regret that choice?
Well, now I have two copies of Shinobi, then yes, perhaps. But I think I also have a copy of Golden Axe somewhere on one of those multi-carts I have.
So, Toy Box Turbos. Check it out if you haven't already. Really good game.
Check it out!
I played had a very short blast on Black Ops 2.
Yes.
And the Wii U. I just want you to play a shooter.
Yeah.
And Black Ops, you know. I recently heard, I think it was Ian talking on the...
It was on
Completely Unnecessary podcast or whatever. And he was saying, oh, that was really popular. Lots of people really like Black Ops. And it made me go back to it and think, well, what is it about Black Ops that people like so much? And it's probably the multiplayer, not the single player.
Yeah.
I found myself skipping all the cutscenes.
You always skip all the cutscenes, though, let's be honest.
And it seems to have, you know, a narrative, a rather complex narrative, to be honest.
Yeah, with time travel and all this nonsense.
You switch between so many different characters. You know, it's a little bit confusing.
It's kind of something they established in Modern Warfare, though. Like, because Call of Duty 1 and Call of Duty 2, you would flick between characters, but they wouldn't really be that noticeable when you did. You know, like, you'd play as the Americans and the Russians in World War II, for example. And it was still kind of... you was in the same places. You were just different units diverging on different points and stuff.
It does give you different perspectives on the action. But the action is just a guy pops up and you shoot him.
Yeah.
It's not like a game like GoldenEye. Even the remake of GoldenEye, it employed some sort of strategic thinking to how you play the game. I guess to make up for it, I noticed there was I accidentally went into this mode, some sort of strategy mode where you command regiments of troops.
Okay.
So you can play on the ground, but then you can order units around. You can switch to a top-down view and move stuff around. And I was like, oh, I don't want to play this. This is not why I turned it on. So not that kind of strategy.
Yeah.
But something that wasn't just a linear game where
kill
you're
everything
on a path
in your way, yeah.
Just things pop up and you shoot them. Because, you know, that can be fun for a bit, but I demand a bit more, I think.
I've been watching, I recently subscribed to Giant Bomb Premium, the Giant Bomb cast, because I listen to that podcast a lot, and they have on it, there's a guy called Drew Scanlon, and he's never played Metal Gear, and so they're doing a video series on their Premium stream where this guy plays Metal Gear Solid for the first time. I'm rewatching it and just seeing some of the nice little details, like the guards going into the bathroom and using the bathroom and then washing their hands, and that's part of their rotation of how they walk around, and just little things about them, like having little quirks and maybe like resting behind something.
That's what you expect from a Kojima game.
Yeah, but it's stuff that you never see in any other game. Like, and it's not like you ever in Call of Duty and you walk around the corner and like there's soldiers off guard. You know what I mean? Like,
it's not like GoldenEye.
No,
GoldenEye is, you know, soldiers on the toilet. So yeah, exactly. Scratching themselves. There's a pace to a game. You know, it gets slow and it gets faster in GoldenEye. I'm just using that as an example.
Yeah.
In Call of Duty, they didn't seem to slow down much.
No.
Not in this one, anyway, that I've been playing. I can't recall in previous Call of Duties there being... Maybe Modern Warfare. I can't remember.
No, they were still pretty...
Yeah, it's pretty fast-paced.
Thick and fast. Like, even Call of Duty 1 and 2, man. Like, it's always been, like, very
And if that's what the games are, that's what the games are.
And that's what I'm thinking, like... When you think of console first-person shooters, I think that's maybe a quirk of them more, that they kind of do experiment with the genre and they kind of do GoldenEye things. I mean, Perfect Dark had some stuff like that in it.
Oh, yeah, you know, interesting tasks like explode the taxi and, you know, in the Blade Runner-esque level.
There's loads of stuff like that as well in, like, Time Splitters 2, where you had to do weird things where you weren't necessarily just walking around getting everything. I think... If you think
record
things like,
a meeting, take a photo of something.
If you think of like Quake and Doom, they also have this kind of just waves and waves of enemies coming at you. You need to kill them kind of thing. Less Quake 4. Quake 4
but
has
that's
a story
all about
and
atmosphere
narrative and stuff.
In, say, Doom, for instance, and Quake, you know, the atmosphere is very...
But I think it's the atmosphere of COD. I think, you know, the whole idea is that you're a one-man army against overwhelming odds.
Yeah.
You know, you're not a spy going around somewhere or doing something quirky.
No, it's true. It's incredibly violent as well. Incredibly violent.
Yeah.
I suddenly switched to a character. I don't know who he was or whatever, but he was wanted by someone and he just had his sister kidnapped and he got very angry and he went on this kind of killing spree. And they set up this scene where you're just mowing down soldiers, you know, with a shotgun, and you seem to have more energy than usual. And it's your controller's vibrating all the time and you just seem red and you're like, I mean... Whoa, it was bloodthirsty. You know, it really did have an effect on me, on my the pace of my heart and such. And that was quite unique, I felt, for a first-person shooter, to be put in a situation of, like, this guy was on a rage, a killing spree, and it was scary.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I've got to shoot him. And he's so fast, you don't have time to think. But you do get a sort of buzz from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit frightening.
Interesting.
So that was a weird experience with that. I didn't play it. I had to go out, so I didn't finish the level. That was my brief experience Call of Duty Black Ops 2. I will revisit the game. I do go back to every now and again. It's very unusual that I actually play these Call of Duty games. I've never owned one until Black Ops 2. Oh, yeah, I did. I own Modern Warfare on the Wii.
Yeah.
But I had a thing, like, I'm not interested in real world war, you know.
I bought Call of Duty 2 because there wasn't really a lot to play, because I used to be on a forum called X360 for the ill-fated X360 magazine. And when the Xbox 360 came out, we were all like, yeah, we should all play online. And Call of Duty 2 was the only real game we could do that on.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of my first proper console first-person shooter. Like, I'd played Time Splitter, as I played GoldenEye, but I'd never really been into a first-person shooter and playing it online. As much as I was with that game, and I really enjoyed it.
A different experience online, isn't it?
Yeah, but it was more the banter, it was more the chat room while playing a game kind of concept, rather than me really loving the game. Call of Duty 4, I did really enjoy.
Yeah.
And I thought there were some nice mechanical changes and stuff from the second one. I hated the third Call of Duty, and I nearly didn't go back to it, and I played.
What was it about that one?
They tried to make it like Battlefield. The first Treyarch game, they tried to make it a completely different game. They tried to make it so you were a soldier with like set classes, like in a Counter-Strike or in a Battlefield specifically. They were going after that because Battlefield 2 had launched.
This is Call of Duty 3.
Yes.
On the Xbox.
Which is the black sheep of the Call of Duty family, is the one no one mentions, because their Modern Warfare came because...
Call of Duty 4, Modern
Infinity
Warfare.
Infinity Ward said they weren't going to work on another Call of Duty game. And then Treyarch then were like, oh my God, well, you know, we need another Call of Duty game. And they were afraid about losing the franchise because it had been like one game of the year and stuff Call of Duty 2 had. So they had Treyarch work on Call of Duty 3. And then Infinity Ward came back and were like, no, you're not going to fucking wreck the name we've built by just putting out crap games. Because Treyarch had made, like, Call of Duty 2, the big red one, and these subpar, like...
They're not really a bad developer, though.
No, no, I mean, like, Black Ops shows that. Like, that's a really good game. But at the time, I think the Activision was maybe trying to push another agenda with these games, and Infinity Ward didn't like it, and they came back and they made Modern Warfare, which then... blew everyone away by how different it was to a regular first-person shooter, and that's become the staple mold that these games now try and replicate.
And now we're Advanced Warfare, and then there'll probably be Advanced Warfare 2 and Advanced Warfare 3.
Oh, there's three studios now, isn't there? There's like Sledgehammer, Treyarch, and the other one I can't remember the name of. Well, no, Infinity Ward changed their name, didn't they?
Sledgehammer.
Infinity Ward became Sledgehammer, but they got another studio as well. But I can't remember. There's Neversoft and another studio.
Oh, they've got Raven were helping on one of them.
Yeah.
I don't know if they've merged with something else.
Perhaps they have. I'm sure there's a third studio anyway.
Yeah. So it was a harrowing experience in places. Another harrowing experience is the game Binding of Isaac. Binding of Isaac.
Not
I keep
blinding.
Calling it
blinding say,
every week.
You do.
He can see perfectly well.
He can. In fact, you said he
behind
uses
his tears.
His tears as a weapon, which seems mental.
So I'd not played this game. This game's been around for some time. It's got a really depressing setup. Isaac's mother is very religious. She doesn't give Isaac the time of day. She's more concerned with her religious studies, and she swears she hears the voice of God telling her to do things. Eventually gets to a point where this voice is telling her to kill her son, Isaac, which is quite, you know, this is uncharted territory, I feel, in the video games. And then Isaac manages to escape into a basement through a trap door, and he has to kill all these demons with his tears. He's this naked child, you know, cold and alone, with all these surrounded by monsters, crying his eyes out because his mother wants to kill him. And has abandoned him. Whoa!
Pretty deep video game. Nice and light-hearted.
The actual gameplay is, I guess you could compare it to, I think Gauntlet would be the... Zelda's cross with Gauntlet.
Yeah, okay.
Would be the best comparison I could make, because you go into one room, there's like floods of enemies.
Yeah.
In, you know, sometimes you get a room with not so many enemies in. It's a bit like Spelunky as well.
It's got roguelike,
when,
right?
Yeah, when you die,
yeah,
you go back to the beginning and you start again. And different enemies spawn, different items spawn.
Interesting. Do you keep anything?
No, I don't think so. I'm not 100% sure, but I didn't notice I was keeping anything.
Interesting. So theoretically speaking, then you could get to the end boss and die and then have to start the whole game over again.
Possibly. I have to spend a bit more time with it.
Okay.
And I wasn't sure about the game at first. How you fire at the enemies is mapped to the face buttons on the Vita I've been playing it on. So it's X, triangle, you know, square, circle. And it fires in different directions. They're your tiers. You also get bombs you can pick up. You use the bombs to destroy enemies, or more so destroy rocks to get at collectibles. There's money as well that you pick up. I'm still kind of understanding how that works. I'm not sure exactly. But that's Binding of Isaac, and I think you should check it out, Matt.
I will definitely give it a
look. It's free at the moment on PlayStation Network, PlayStation Plus subscribers.
Yeah.
And it's got its own unique style.
It does look like a very cool game, like, from what I've seen of it.
It's addictive.
Yeah?
I have to say.
Okay, I'll have to give it a look. Yeah. To be honest, I haven't really played that much this week, other than the usual Game Boy games. Like I said, I've been playing quite a lot today, but I don't want to let the cat out of the bag of what's coming next with biographic stuff, so I'm not going to say what they are. But I've bought a few things.
Oh, you have? What have you bought, Matthew?
Surprise, surprise, Game Boy related. I bought a copy of Snow Brothers, which is a Capcom Bubble Bobble-esque game, which you are a pair of snowmen who are brothers, as the name suggests. And instead of blowing bubbles like in Bubble Bobble or using a rod like in Rodland, you roll your enemies up in snow.
Mm.
They come at you and you press A and you roll them up in a snowball.
I actually did then.
Yeah, I put my hands towards the mic and wiggled my bottom like I was rolling a big snowball. Yeah, I bought it, as I mentioned last week, because I hit the midway mark of my Game Boy collection. I kind of wanted a game to celebrate that and to be the one that was the halfway mark.
Oh, really?
So I picked that up. It's quite a rare title. It's one of these only released in Europe deals.
Hmm.
And as it's by Capcom, it's quite popular. And like I said, because it's got this Bubble Bobble, very cutesy aesthetic to it, which I'm kind of into. So I'll look forward to playing that. I also picked up a game called Tracks as well, which is boxed.
Was that with X?
Yes.
Yeah.
The tank game.
Tracks.
Yes. Mm. It's supposed to be very good. I got it boxed because anytime I see it, it seems to be the same price as this boxed copy.
Yeah, how do you feel
for
about boxed ones? Will you just have them if they're, as you say, of the right price?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, if I can get a boxed copy for the same price as a cart, then why not?
But then you don't... Do you then stick your cart in your wallet?
I take the cart out of the boxes, yeah.
Yeah.
I put the boxes in the cupboard. It's always nice to have the manual, like...
Yeah,
when
that's
I went
right,
back
yeah.
to Wales last and I went into a Super Tomato in Cardiff, they had a big box of manuals and I bought one or two of the manuals. So I was just like, well, it's nice to have these things. Like, I bought one for Monster Max because that game isn't as straightforward as one might think. Mm. It's got this weird isometric view, which isn't really something you associate with a Game Boy game.
Especially older games really relied heavily on manuals.
They definitely
like
did.
Zelda.
Yeah, yeah.
You download the Wii U Virtual Console version of Zelda. I think I've mentioned this before.
Yeah.
You don't get any kind of instruction book.
No.
And it's very difficult without.
It is, yeah.
Because it kind of, it assumes you know certain things from reading the instructions.
Well, so there's certain times I'll play Game Boy games and then like a third of the way into playing them, I'll realise that there's a certain mechanic and go, oh my God, why the hell haven't I used this the entire way through?
Yeah. Because you're not aware if you haven't read it in the instruction book before.
Yeah, exactly. Like sometimes you look at stuff and then...
Although I'd never read them as a kid, you know.
No, neither would I.
My dad would always say, read the instructions first.
Yeah, my mum would say that too, and I never would. I'd always just pick up and play and figure out a game. But like, again, I think it goes back to this idea of what's a bad game. Because there's probably some games I have for the NES that I've left in my mum's and are abandoned, still in the box under the bed that I didn't bring to Denmark with me, that I've probably gone like, oh my God, that's a terrible game. But I've just not understood the mechanics because I've not read the manual.
Mm.
And it's probably a perfectly fine game.
Mm. So yeah, read the manual before you judge.
Yes.
That can be yeah, a good rule when reviewing video games.
Yes, read the manual. Well, when they came with manuals. Now you can't read the manual. You can read the health and safety advice.
Have you picked up anything else this week?
No, I don't think so. That's pretty much it. I'm in the I'm in the process of buying an NES SP.
Oh, are you now?
Yes. For 150 crow for a 101 version. So
wow.
Yeah, I was just
the ultimate one.
It is, and that will then be my NES of choice. I'll have to get a nice little case for it.
Your NES of choice or your Game Boy?
My Game Boy of choice.
You no longer use your pink one.
Well, I like my pink one. To be honest, the only reason I use the pink one, which is currently sat by the side of me, and I'm going to stroke it affectionately, because it is a well-loved Game Boy, as you can see. It's pretty scratched to death. And I always see pink ones. Pink ones tend to be the one I see the most, then the tribal one, and then occasionally I see the blue one. And so I'm like, well, chances are if this pink one goes walkies, then I can always replace this.
Not your average pink, though, is it? It's a metallic kind of lilac-y pink.
It is, yeah. It's not like full-on neon pink.
No, which is nice. Which you wouldn't feel ashamed as a male
playing that somewhere. No, and I never do. I mean, In all fairness, I quite like the pink Game Boy Pocket. I think that's fun.
Oh, I actually, yeah, that is sort of appealing as well.
Yeah, it is.
It's the same sort of pink that you could get. You know the PS2, the slim one you could get in that pink.
Yeah, oh
as
my
well.
God, I really wish. I saw that in a car boot sale a couple of months ago, and I'm still kicking myself I didn't
SingStar
buy it.
SingStar or something. So, yeah, we don't really care about pink consoles, do
no,
we?
No, pink consoles are fine.
There's nothing wrong with pink.
Yeah, they had a pink controller as well with those pink PS2s. Yeah, and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
A good friend, Austin, I would imagine, will be buying the pink GameCube controller for Super Smash Brothers, which is out next week.
He's just going to use his original ones.
Is he going to use his orange, snazzy, rare one?
Yeah, he wants the official Nintendo ones. And the Princess Peach one isn't.
It is. I believe
it's licensed by Nintendo, but it's made by another.
It's licensed by Nintendo, but all of them are licensed by Nintendo. It is official Nintendo.
Yeah, but then you've got the one that looks exactly like the GameCube controller.
Yes, that's true. Just with the Smash logo on it.
He's more keen on. Oh, fair enough. Me. But he does need a Princess Peach.
I think
GameCube
so too.
Controller,
yeah,
doesn't he? And well, I've bought some games.
Oh, really?
This week, topping off the list is Star Trek 25th Anniversary for PC on floppy disk.
Interesting. That's also available on the Game Boy.
It is.
Yes.
I saw that when I was looking at this one. This is a game I'd long thought about getting. It's a point-and-click adventure game. But I like the original Star Trek, the original crew. And I've long toyed with the idea of getting hold of a Star Trek game. Did a little bit of research. You know, because I'm kind of like to have a game based on some of my favourite like films or franchises. Yeah. And I like the idea of once you've maybe watched an episode of Star Trek, you can go, oh, now I can go and play the game. Or if you've watched a Bond film, you want, oh, now I really want to experience
the game
that.
Bit, yeah.
Oh, I can play the game. So this was just the fact that I wanted the Star Trek game.
Yeah.
And this looked like the proper Star Trek experience to me.
Okay.
So I picked it up on PC. I've got old computers at home.
Yeah.
I assume one of them's going to play it.
Windows 95. I would imagine, yeah. Is it that old, is it?
I haven't got a 95 anymore. It's got ME, which is probably not very helpful.
Well, as long as you have a floppy disk drive to take the stuff off a bit, you can play it through an emulator. You can emulate an older version of Windows and play it on that.
Yeah, I think I've got another computer as well somewhere that should play it. Anyway, there's those PC games, actually, that I never got that I'd still like to get. Worms 2, never owned it.
Yeah.
Worms Armageddon was the one I really took to. I had the original Worms and Worms Reinforcements. Worms 2 has always been like the black sheep of the family for me because I never owned it, and it did things a little bit differently.
I don't think I've ever played Worms 2. No, I'm thinking about
it. It's an interesting way they died. They would kind of just tie themselves into a knot and die rather than blow themselves up.
Really?
Yeah, so
interesting.
I'd like to go back to that and get it quite cheap now, I suppose. Creatures as well was another game that always interested me.
I
as
had
a kid.
That as a kid. I think it was okay. I think it was very
You'd
good.
Raise
for
a little
time.
Creature out of the egg and
yeah. It's very weird. Like that was one of the first games I was aware of. Customization and things of being able to download things from the internet that other people had created and put them into a game.
Yeah, I did that a lot with The Sims.
I used to do that then also with Dark Forces 2. People would make character mods for that and texture packs and stuff, and I always used to play those.
That's a really fun aspect of PC gaming. Yeah. I did the same on Worms. Sound banks as well were a huge part of that for me. And there was another game that I saw on PC on eBay that I think, oh, Toonstruck, do you remember that?
Toonstruck, no.
It's got
that
a
one
clown,
a
really scary clown on the cover.
Oh, that rings a bell.
I think it's some sort of graphic adventure, but I'm not 100% sure.
Toonstruck.
Look it up. I'll just talk about what else I bought this week. Now, Matt alerted me to some 3DO games which are being sold.
Oh, did you purchase some?
Retro
did you?
Trader. No, I didn't. I didn't actually. I went on eBay and found them slightly cheaper.
Aha!
I probably could have, tried to
get
them down in price a little bit, but I actually decided to leave the group because I was being tempted far too often by things. I think I didn't like seeing them on my Facebook feed all the time.
See, this is the interesting thing for me, because I'm only now buying Game Boy stuff. Yeah. I never really feel that tempted when I don't see Game Boy stuff because it doesn't seem to crop up on that list that often. And so I just kind of look. I just kind of look at it. Well, like, I've got 200 titles now. Anytime it tends to, it's a Game Boy Color with like Mario that is far more than I want.
Yeah.
It was yesterday. There was a copy of Gradius Interstellar Assault, which is Nemesis 2, on there, and the guy wanted 15 quid for the cart, and I was like, "No, you're all right." Mm. Like, I don't want to pay eBay prices on there, and often people are looking for eBay prices, that doesn't appeal to me at all.
Like, I always assume that maybe the price being offered would be lower than eBay.
It depends on the seller, and lot of the time, of people who are selling on there, you will see the people who are regularly selling and regularly buying things locally or within a few kilometres of the town and then reselling them. For example, there was a copy of Mega Man on there that I missed out on by a few seconds for 25 quid, which by the price of Mega Man these days, which is going for about 70 quid, is a very good deal, but the people knew that it isn't that rare a game, and they were like, if anyone wants it, it's 25 quid.
Yeah.
And you can get bargains on there, but a lot of the time it's just people who join the group and then go, hey, how much is this worth? Oh, great, 70 quid then. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. But it was far too tempting. I didn't want my Facebook to turn into a shopping experience.
I left the Toy Trader group as a result of that because I only had it because I was getting tagged by our good friend Sam, who was alerting me to things every now and again, because sometimes people would post up Game Boy games and stuff in there, and then he was tagging me on those posts. But that doesn't happen very often now, like, because they have this separate game trader group. But yeah, so which video games did
Star you buy? Starblade from Namco.
Shump.
It looks like Star Fox.
Yay!
It's that one you get to play when, like, Tekken 4's loading or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, do you know them? Well, the loading screens.
I remember
on
playing
PS2
Galaga
Tekken
on
games.
PS1.
Or PS1, even PS1 Tekken games. And
I used to play that a lot more than Tekken, actually.
Yeah. Look, very, very crisp visuals, polygons, you know, no textures or anything. And I thought I'd give that a shot. It's relatively affordable. It was under a tenner I got it with postage.
Yeah.
So pick that one up. Now, it may surprise you here. I said I wasn't sure about this to you. Powers Kingdom, it's an RPG.
Yeah. Interesting, because I assumed when you said you bought some 3DO games, not looking at your list that I am now, that you would have bought Primal Rage.
Well, I did a bit of research on Primal Rage.
It's not good on the 3DO.
And it's not really good in anything.
It's not very good. The second one, apparently, the arcade board they fished out and found from somewhere is apparently quite good.
I still, you know, think it's got its merit.
I'm still going to buy it on the Game Boy.
It's the ports of the game which never quite managed to live up to the arcade game.
Oh, really?
There is a version of it on a Midway Arcade Treasures compilation.
Yeah.
Which I have a strange feeling I already own.
Okay.
So I think, you know, it wasn't that integral that I own Primal Rage.
Interesting.
Because I think I already have it in some form. Maybe that's the worst form of it. Maybe the 3DO version is better. I'm not sure. Yeah. None of these ports seem to measure up much. Because that was meant to be the one on the Midway Arcade Treasures. That was meant to be the one that would be close to the arcade.
Yeah.
It isn't. It's something to do with some technology that they actually built into the original machine that they can't emulate on anything else or something like that.
That's
sort of copyright protection. That it was very difficult to reproduce it on anything else because of that.
Interesting. It's actually, there's a game that some Game Boy people will know of, and people who are very into the Game Boy and Shumps, called Zaz, which is a quite a pricey Japanese-only shoot-em-up on the Game Boy. And it's very difficult to emulate and very difficult to capture as well. You essentially need to play it on a Game Boy or a Super Game Boy is kind of the only way to do it, because it takes advantage of the Game Boy's memory in a special way that the Advance and Color don't really do.
Ah.
And that's how it looks so fluid and so beautiful, is because it's essentially assigning things to the Game Boy's memory at such a speed that it's very quickly deleting them, and the Advance and Color don't really know to handle that. They have faster processors, so it looks really flashy on there because it's doing everything too fast because the console sped up.
Yeah,
it's the same with Bubble Bobble as well. That's how they get the scrolling so smooth in Bubble Bobble. It does the same thing, and that's why it's not really great to capture Bubble Bobble on a Game Boy player, because it does the same thing where it tries to emulate the Game Boy doing something but does it faster. Sometimes happens with games.
Yeah. So maybe I'll pick that up at some time, but I decided to go Powers Kingdom because I watched a short review of it and it said the soundtrack was very good, it was very addictive, it was mostly turn-based battling as opposed to a fully fleshed out adventure story.
Okay.
It seemed like to me. Yeah. So it seemed like it was core turn-based battling gameplay all the way.
Yeah.
You know, without the faff.
So it's just the boring turn-based bit in between then, rather than any of the... It's all meat.
But it's all gameplay, in other words, rather than cutscenes. That's what it seemed like to me anyway.
But the cutscenes are the bit that breaks up the gameplay.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, it looked like it was a game as such.
Yeah. You that's so weird that you've gone for like the anti-JRPG. That's like... That's hell for me. That's the...
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Yeah, maybe I'm actually... I only saw a very quick clip of it.
Yeah.
But it was cheap enough for me to say, hey, this looks a bit unique. You know, on the 3DO, I don't have another game like that.
Yeah.
I was willing to give it a shot.
I had a weird dream before I pointed those 3DO games out to you, actually, that I bought a 3DO and it was red and it looked kind of like an N64 but with a disc tray in it. So I guess kind of like a squash Sega Saturn. Mm. And you were quite impressed because you didn't have that model. And you were like, I'll have to get one of those so I can have two of them.
With dark red like the Wii Mini, you know, on the...
Yeah, side. that kind of burgundy tone. Yeah,
it's
that kind of
burgundy
thing.
Tone that really does it for me.
Mm, burgundy tone.
And I can't remember if I mentioned this last week, but I picked up 3 Mega CD games, all unboxed.
No, you didn't.
No. So, for those not in know, recently I picked up a Mega CD.
Yeah.
Very excited about that.
Yeah.
Long been on my list of wants.
It has.
But what games was I going to get for it? That was the big question.
Snatcher
would be, yes, game of choice, but difficult.
Police Knots, translated.
Batman Returns.
Okay.
BC Racers.
Don't know what that is.
It's a prehistoric karting game, okay, which is meant to be pretty good.
I assumed it was such, but like I was wondering if it had any ties to like any characters like Bonk or
Chuck Rock.
Yes, or anything of that ilk.
Maybe, I'm not sure. And KO Flying Squadron, which I've mentioned,
which you wanted,
multiple times. This is the demo of the game. The seller was nice enough to include a handwritten password, which unlocks the entire game.
Oh yes, you did tell me this. Yeah.
So a game which usually goes upwards of £85 on eBay.
You said that there was a workaround with the password.
And
that's
this
nice
password, you don't get the box or the manual or anything, but you can
play the full game. That's cool.
Just with a password. I don't know how that happened. So very pleased with those three. Give me something to play on my Mega CD when I get it, at least.
Yeah, that's true.
So that, I think, was everything. I've been on eBay a lot today, actually, looking at things. And I was buying Christmas presents and such.
Yeah.
Not all off eBay, obviously, but... eBay was on, and I found this guy who was selling like what looked like his whole game collection, and it was so good. He had such a variety of different things, and a lot of things I was actually interested in.
Yeah,
and I was thinking, what leads someone to a point where they've collected all this, and all these games were good. You know, they're games I'd love to own and have, and then it's like, well, that's it. It's all going, all of it.
It gets to a point, doesn't it? You know, where someone has to give in your life and you just kind of go, okay, this can go. Or you become disenchanted with the whole experience. Like, maybe it's a financial thing. Maybe these games you spent years collecting that you paid like £5 for suddenly worth £80 each. And you're like, well, I've always wanted to do this. I'll sell my games off.
It depends on your financial situation. It depends on, maybe you're not as interested in them now as you once were. But it is a huge effort to list that many thousands of games.
Is it a guy selling his Sega collection or
all sorts? Not just Sega, no.
Interesting.
There's such a wide, broad range of games on there.
Happens.
Game Boy, Game Gear, all sorts.
Yeah.
Mega Drive, Master System. It was huge variety. So yeah, it's such a big task to do that. I wouldn't like to sit there and list everything that I own and try and sell it on eBay.
Well, no, I mean, it's kind of got to that stage now where I've got so many duplicate games that I don't want to do that. Mm. Like, where I'm looking at them and I'm like, well, this is just kind of money that's sitting around now. But at the same time, it's like, oh, God, there's so much hassle to take photos and then to list it and then...
Write the description.
You write the description.
Then go off and post it. And...
Oh, God.
Yeah, a little easier on something like retro trade.
Yeah, well, this is what I was trying to do on Retro Collect, like trying to trade a load of this stuff off. And I did trade a few things, but I think I'm just going to try and sell a lot of this stuff now with Inside Denmark, because then I can get rid of it quickly and easily. Mm. And as my foray into the Danish postal system, trying to send some into Holland recently, has shown, that I don't want to send stuff out of the country because it's not worth the hassle.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a shame, but there we go.
Maybe we should talk a little bit about Mario Brothers, the movie.
Oh, God.
You didn't watch it.
I didn't, because I've seen it many times. I used to watch it pretty much once or twice a week when I was a kid, because my mate Andrew used to love it.
And there are plenty of people out there who love it. I'm actually one of them. I think it's a really entertaining film. I watched a fantastic documentary about the film. I've recently purchased the film on Blu-ray.
Yes.
And it comes with a 60-minute documentary, which is incredibly insightful into the troubled production of the film, and a script rewrite which caused all kinds of problems.
Interesting. Why?
And well, the studio didn't feel like it was aged down enough.
Okay.
And they got in the guys who wrote Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure to rewrite a script. Problem being, the director had worked so closely with his script, and everything was set, the sets were built for his script, you see, because it was so late this rewrite happened.
Yeah.
He had everything planned out, and they just had to muddle their way through it with the new script, even having to rewrite bits to fit in with what props they'd built and all sorts, just to make the thing work. And it was very difficult for the actors, which is probably why Bob Hoskins always called it the worst project he'd been involved with of his entire career. But that aside, the end result is something quite unique. I mean, it's the production design on the film is fantastic, and that's what you expect from the guy who worked on the Blade Runner.
Yeah.
As well, Blade Runner, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, is it? And
Wow, so it's quite a prolific.
There was a lot of people making it then behind that film. It's just it got a bit messy.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's not like I completely hate the film. It's not like anyone ever goes out to make a bad film. And if what you're saying is true, then obviously it is, it's on the documentary, then like, it's understandable why that film's a bit of a mess.
A bit of a mess, but it's a good kind of mess, in my opinion. I don't feel like the story's too messy. I mean, if you thought about it so long, probably things wouldn't add up.
Or it isn't even that for me. It just, I don't know. I guess it's just because I didn't really like it when I was a kid. Mm. I guess that kind of stigma a bit's always sat with me.
What I really appreciate is how, you know, the challenge of reinterpreting Mario into something live action.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. How are you going
to
do it?
Of course. I mean, like, you know, the concept of Super Mario, it doesn't really lend itself to a film as it is.
But the actual solution they came to and how they integrated aspects of Mario into it, albeit very subtly.
Yeah.
I thought it was rather well done.
But then, like, I would argue it could just be any adventure film. You know what I mean? Like, it feels a bit formulaic, and then it's got weird aspects to it. That
Bob Hoskins did a great job.
Bob Hoskins is very good in it.
Being Mario.
The guy who plays Cooper as well, I remember.
Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper.
And Luigi is really good in it as well, I think.
Luigi annoyed me, I think, from what I remember. I wasn't really listening to it when you guys were watching it, but from what I remember, Luigi was really annoying to me in that film. I don't know why.
The Goombas are very comical.
Yeah, they are.
The car chase sequence is very exciting. I love the designs of the cars and such, and the prisons and the sets in general. And they built it all.
Yeah.
They built like Cooper's office above the street. They built that whole street.
Yeah.
And then when they do a shot where you see down from Cooper's office down to the street below, that's not a visual effect or anything. That's the fact that they were just looking down the set that
that's
they
pretty
built.
Interesting.
So I actually think it's quite entertaining. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up because
maybe I need to rewatch it.
I watched it the other day. And
maybe I'll give it another watch.
And maybe on the Blu-ray, you'd really quite appreciate the visual.
Yeah,
fidelity.
Perhaps I will.
If it doesn't quite work for you, it doesn't quite work for you. And I think that many people have a low.
It's been about 5 years since I saw it last. Opinion of Maybe it, I should give it another chance. But I did see it an awful lot as a kid.
Yeah.
And I think that may have put me off it. Same with the Street Fighter film, but that is awful. I think we can both agree on that.
I think Super Mario Bros. Is better than Street Fighter the movie.
I would say that. I would also agree.
But then again, I still watch Fight the movie.
Oh God, that's.
I wouldn't watch King of Fighters again.
No, well, you didn't watch King of Fighters. You fell asleep and it made me watch King of Fighters.
It's the worst one. Worst video game film adaption I've ever seen.
Actually, like Here Alone in the Dark is probably the worst video game film, but we need to see that, I think. Yeah. Okay. Right, well, we're just coming in under an hour, so...
What is the worst video game
movie
film
of all time?
Let us know.
No. TMA Cast on Facebook at facebook.com/TomandMatt. Attack. You can check us out on iTunes. You can check us out on Stitcher. Please let other people know about this podcast. If you enjoy listening, why not give us a cheeky rate and subscribe as well?
Make sure it's a cheeky one.
It's got to be cheeky. Wink. Until next time then, guys. Game on.
Game on.